Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
President Trump will hold a press conference at 3 p.m. live today, and WBUR will have that for you. Meanwhile, we continue our coronavirus coverage. Our Week in Review panelists will join us later in the hour to discuss the week's events. First, some updates from today. Senator Ed Markey and state health and medical leaders held a virtual press conference today, updating people on the state of preparedness. WBUR Common Health editor Carrie Goldberg covered it and joins us now. Carrie, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Tiziana.
Boy, we've seen a lot of you this week, Carrie.
I know. I'm riding along with you for the long haul.
And we sure appreciate it. So let me ask you, what struck you about today's meeting?
Well, these were people, very lofty people, like the dean of Harvard Medical School, the head of the Massachusetts Health and Hospital Association, the head of the Nurses Union, leading researchers, virus experts, and they were not mincing words about being very concerned right now. Here's Dr. Peter Slavin. He's the president of Massachusetts General Hospital.
This is likely to be the most significant public health crisis we're going to face in our lifetimes. But as I reminded the group, our institutions, our community, our country has made it through other public health crises in the past, be it world wars, epidemics, or marathon bombings.
So they're being constructive, they're being hopeful and optimistic, but they're also expressing some very serious concerns.
Carrie, were they specific about what the major problems are?
Yes, I would say that everything's converging now onto two major problems. One is clearly there has not been enough testing. So, you know, it seems like we've been having at best hundreds of tests a day, more like dozens. And what should be happening is more like thousands, according to experts. Although we did hear from Mary Lou Sutters, the Secretary of Health and Human Services of the state today, that this weekend, the state lab will double its capacity to 400 tests a day because it's bringing more automation online. But anyway, so that's problem number one is testing. Problem number two, not enough personal protective equipment. That's the gowns and the masks and the gloves that the frontline healthcare workers wear. And this is very worrying. As one person noted today, you wouldn't send a soldier into battle without the right equipment. And these stocks keep running low. But again, just some reassurance came from state officials that a shipment from the national stockpile of this stuff has just come in. So that's a bit of good news, but there is serious concern about personal protective equipment.
Carrie, you spoke a moment ago about testing, and that has been a huge question. What is the very latest on testing?
So the very latest, what I heard at this press conference was that Massachusetts General Hospital and Brigham and Women's Hospital have started doing some of their own testing. Also, we know that there are private firms, Quest and LabCorp, that are coming online. So again, more reason to expect that testing will be rising in the coming days, but still concerned there's not enough of it happening. Here's Senator Ed Markey.
We are failing on testing. We are at war with the coronavirus right now, and we need an historic wartime effort on testing. We need a manufacturing moonshot that enables and ensures that we can make the tests, make them quickly and accurately, ensure that we have all the materials to conduct those tests.
So, Tiziana, a moonshot, a Manhattan Project, an Apollo Project on manufacturing testing. And he's also calling for something similar on manufacturing personal protective equipment, those gowns and masks I was talking about earlier. So he's calling on President Trump both to declare a national emergency, which I gather we expect he may do at 3 o'clock, in order to free up billions of dollars for those efforts and to launch that kind of project.
All right. That's WBUR Common Health editor Carrie Goldberg. Carrie, you're going to stick around and rejoin us for Week in the Review later in the hour, right?
Yes, I will.
Thanks for that. All right, for now, let's turn to schools, where change seems to be happening hourly and families are scrambling to adjust. We are joined now by WBUR Edify editor Kathleen McNerney. Kathleen, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me, Tiziana.
It's great to have you. Let's break it down. Let's do public schools first, then universities, Kathleen. On K through 12, you got Michigan, Ohio, New Mexico, Maryland, Oregon, closing their schools for multiple weeks. What is the status of schools in Massachusetts?
Yeah, there's a lot coming down quickly. No, it's a lot to process for everything. for everyone. So here's what we know so far. Earlier today, Governor Baker said that he is strongly recommending against system-wide closures of schools. He says that closures should be based on the particular situation. For example, if there's a parent or a student with the virus. Now, as I'm sure you know, and many of the listeners know, a lot of districts have been making decisions this week, even today and yesterday, to close for sometimes a matter of weeks as a preventative measure. Many are saying that it is out of an abundance of caution. All right. I was just going to say to the listeners, we are tracking this all on our website, wbur.org/coronavirus. So if help us keep that list up to date, we're trying to provide that service for you.
Perfect. That's perfect. So what do we know, given that there's, you know, that's mixed messages. The state saying one thing, you've got different school districts closing anyway. What do we know as of today about the plans for the Boston Public Schools?
So right now, Boston Public Schools are open, except for one school, which has three campuses, the Elliott School in the North End. There, someone who was in the school recently tested positive for the coronavirus. Mayor Marty Walsh this morning was talking about the situation. Here's what he said.
On Sunday, I will be talking at some point during the day about Boston Public Schools. There will be school Monday. And there'll be school next week, but what we're going to be talking about is laying out a plan for if we have to close the schools and also how we're going to be dealing with our schools moving forward in next week and beyond. And I'll get more into that next week on Sunday. I do not have any answers for you today.
And there's a lot of criticism. There's a change.org petition with over 15,000 signatures right now. People saying they want the schools closed in order to try to mitigate the spread of COVID-19. But Tiziana, I will say for Boston and for many districts, every superintendent that I have talked to, there are a lot of concerns they are trying to balance here. There is, of course, the broader community public health concerns. There are individual student and staff health concerns, both physical and mental. There are food concerns. My colleague Carrie Young is reporting on All Things Considered this afternoon just about this. According to one estimate, there are 300,000 kids in Massachusetts schools who rely on schools to receive breakfast and lunch.
So if they close, the kids may not have access to that food.
Exactly. And I think there's so many layers here. Schools are meeting special needs. Kids have varied home situations. Many are homeless, dealing with trauma. And it's something that district and municipal leaders are keenly aware of the effects of school closures on families overall, over the whole community, both in terms of potential possible exposure to the virus if schools remain open with people coming and going, and on the challenges if families cannot work because they have to stay home or kids are home alone because their parent or guardian has to keep working.
All right, there's a lot there, and I know we'll have continuing conversations about this. I want to shift gears in our last couple minutes to a couple other things. Let's talk colleges and universities. Many here in the state sending their students home, transitioning to online classes. Is there more coming, and how are students reacting to it?
Yeah, again, it has a lot of layers, and I'll try to be concise. We are also tracking this on WBUR.org, and the reaction, the scramble, is real and varied because students have so many different circumstances. My colleagues Fred Tice and Max Larkin have been looking at this. International students are trying to arrange travel. They're struggling with having to go online. Some are looking at Airbnbs, but that's costly. They're looking to stay with friends or relatives in other states. Max Larkin has a great story out today about students who many schools have given a petition process for students to request to stay in the dorms if the dorms are closing. And Max has talked to students who say their petitions were denied. and they're really worried. One student saying, you know, worried about heading back to Thailand and the risk of contracting coronavirus through travel or going back to Thailand, but also feeling like he would burden friends if he stayed with them.
So it sounds like we're going to have a number of stories coming up on that from the team, Kathleen. I do want to ask one other question. We've been watching for this for a while, and in a moment of what we might call interesting timing, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education released today its long-awaited review of the Boston Public Schools with an accompanying MOU. Can you just very briefly give us the headlines from that report?
Yep, I have not had a chance to read the whole thing, but here's the top line. In the three-year MOU, the aim is to improve 33 of the district's lowest performing schools. There's a particular focus on supporting students with disabilities and improving student transportation. It includes some kind of resources. I'll be speaking with Superintendent Caselius shortly after I get off with you.
Terrific. And we look forward to watching all of this with you and your team as we go forward. That's WBUR Edify editor Kathleen McNerney. Thanks, Kathleen.
Thank you.
All right. Now, among the most awaited news this week has actually been the fate of the Boston Marathon. And here to talk about it is WBUR reporter Alex Ashlock. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon.
So we got the confirmation this morning that the marathon is postponed to Monday, September 14th for the first time, get this, in 124 years. What went into this decision, Alex?
Incredibly complicated decision because of all the groups that are involved in the marathon, the cities and towns that host the course. You've got the city of Boston. You've got the state of Massachusetts. It wasn't the Boston Athletic Association's decision to make. They had to work with all these other entities. And I think what it really came down to is they just ran into a situation where they didn't have much choice because so many other cities were banning these large events like the Boston Marathon. And as you said, it's the first time this has happened in 124 years of the Boston Marathon. Here's Governor Baker on the decision today.
The House and the Senate both said that to not run the marathon at all would be an incredibly distressing decision, in part because it's a great event, in part because it's a big boon to the local economy, but also just because of the symbolism and the significance that that race represents.
It's interesting because other marathons are making similar decisions. London just today canceled their marathon, which is April 26, right after Boston, and then they moved it to October 4th. So they're also recognizing, like Boston, just the importance culturally and economically of these huge events that are being held in their cities.
So, Alex, the fall calendar is
really
crowded. So how on earth did they find a date where they could move the Boston Marathon?
You've got the summer ending, Labor Day, college move-ins at that time of year, the Jewish holidays in later September, and all these other marathons I just mentioned. So right now in September, you have the Berlin Marathon. That's the 27th. October's been moved to, or London's been moved to October 4th. Chicago's October 11th. New York is November 1st. So there's just all these things going on, and they think they just came down to a time that they could settle on. And it might not be perfect for everyone, but that's the day they settled on, September 14th.
You know, I realized just now, I don't know this. How long does one need for recovery between two marathons? Do you know?
Well, you can't really do, the elite runners don't do, they're not going to be doing all four of those marathons.
Okay.
They won't even do two of them. The wheelchair athletes, on the other hand, can do London and Boston, which are only a week apart. So some of those athletes will probably do, you know, more than one of these marathons. And there's a lot of money involved for those elite athletes participating in these big marathons.
All right, sticking with the runners for a minute. Runners, including a couple of our own colleagues here at WBUR, have been training to run this marathon. I know this weekend's supposed to be a big run.
It was supposed to be.
Yeah, so what does this mean for people who have been training?
Well, you just have to put your training not on hold necessarily, but maybe just consider this sort of a speed bump. Marathon training periods are usually 18 weeks, 4 months roughly. And I think what would we have 5 months between April and September? So it's almost like they're going to go through two training cycles in order to get ready for the new date of the marathon in September. Here's what Tom Grilk, he's the chief executive officer of the Boston Athletic Association. Here's the message he had for runners today.
It is inspiring to see all of these cities and towns and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts come together to find a way to keep the Boston Marathon going for 2020.
And it is important to keep it going, right, Alex?
Sure.
I mean, marathon brings a million people into the region every spring, generates over 200 $100 million in tourist spending. Then there's tens of millions in charitable donations. What are the financial implications of not doing it in April and doing it later?
Well, one of the implications might be that the charities will end up raising way more money than they usually do, because people who are signed up right now to run the marathon and they're signed up with a charity, they're just going to keep raising money. And they raise $40 million a year. So that figure could probably be even bigger
by
September. So maybe there's a good benefit there. And Mayor Walsh was talking today about making that weekend in September sort of a way to help local businesses recover from, you know, what might happen, what's already happened economically, and what might happen by September, because who knows where we'll be in September with regard to COVID-19 and the economic situations there. And as I mentioned, you know, they're going to continue to raise money for charity. So
what about
we'll
if you can't run in September?
That's a good question. I asked Tom Grilk that question today, and they've been focused on how to reschedule the marathon rather than thinking about, well, what about the runners who can't run in September? They haven't made a plan for that. I have to think that they'll let those people defer to next year eventually. That's just my speculation, because that's what other marathons have done when similar decisions have been made. You might remember after the bombing in 2013, there were something like 5,000 runners who didn't finish. They let those people come back and run in 2014.
And we didn't postpone in 2014.
That's right.
I say that because this race is 124 years old. It's got a long history. It is really a part of the soul of Boston. You know this race well. What does it mean to the city and the region that we are taking this step?
You know, I'm having a hard time thinking about how to answer that question, because it was so different in 2013 and 14. After the bombing, I don't think there was really any conversation about canceling the marathon the next year. But we're in sort of this weird, uncharted situation where we've got this virus, this sickness. It's March. We don't even really know what April 20th, will it even look like? Is it going to go on for months? We just really don't know. So I think, you know, the Patriots Day weekend is such a big event, a great weekend in the city. We may still be dealing with COVID-19 on April 20th. That might be the focus. And, hopefully by the time we get to September 14th, this will all be over. People can focus on the marathon and having a good time in the city.
Let's hope that that's the case.
I hope so.
That is WBUR's Alex Ashlock. Alex, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.